introduction to this text. So I'm not going to repeat all that, but I do want to review just a few important points. The first one is Dogen's, I would call it his core radical vision of the unity of our aspiration to practice, our practice, realization, or to use the big word enlightenment, you know, our opening, and our actualization. He calls it, or in English, actualization, which is how we live our practice, how we live. We're not just sitting here being enlightened, but how we live it, right? That those aspects are one unity. They're not a linear progression. They're more and continuously kind of renewing or circling in our lives. These aspects, they're not separate. And Dogen, if you were here on Sunday, calls continuous practice the circle of the way. It's a beautiful image. You'll see in a kitchen in front hall, we have a rainbow image. It's called an enso. You see those Zen circles. Most often they're in black ink. But we have two images here at the Zendo. And that, and so it's hard to even put into words. You know, it's sometimes an image of wholeness or enlightenment or emptiness. There's different words that are given to it. But we could call it the circle of our practice, aspiration, practice, awakening, and actualization, living. That's really key to Dogen's view of our practice. And also that we do this practice in a kind of matrix of connection with each other and with the world, not just all by ourselves.
Okay. Very sorry. Just have to stop you for a second. Can you just do me a favor and just try to like turn the mic the other way around so it's on the other side of your face? Like take my headset off and turn that around.
What's this way?
Yeah. So and then yeah, and then kind of yeah.
How's that sound for people?
That sounding better out there in Zoom land? A little bit better?
Looks like it.
Getting a little better.
It's okay.
Is that better? Do you want to try? We've just got a little. You sound a little bit like you're in a bubble. We're just trying to.
Okay. Is this improved? I'm not seeing any response.
Yeah, I've got a thumbs up from Caro. Thumbs up from Corey Eugene.
Okay,
There we
well,
go.
let's. Okay, so the next point, is that although Dogen's writing and language can be difficult or philosophically sophisticated, there's a deep simplicity in it. And to this practice, we sit still in silence, we walk, we stand, we lie down. Those are the Four Noble Postures that the Buddha taught: sitting, standing, lying down, and walking. Paying attention to body and breath, sensations, perceptions, mental activity. And in doing that simple practice, we directly experience the nature of our existence, self and other, the ever-changing nature of our existence. Those are the basics: impermanence, right? Always changing, and no separate self, only self in relationship. And in doing this simple practice, we see our conditioned limiting patterns of thinking and speaking and behavior that tell us we are something, you know, and that it's us against the world. We see those, and bit by bit, we let go. Those of you who were here Sunday will remember the telling how Dogen, as a young monk in his teens, came to ask the question that would guide his life and his teaching. If we are inherently of Buddha nature, of that if awakening is our fundamental nature, why do we have to practice so hard to become enlightened? That's what the young yogin taught us. And it became really, I think, his life work, and all his writings are his answer to this fundamental question of his. And one more important point is that Dogen lived and wrote and practiced in turbulent, violent, and unstable times, fraught with disasters, earthquakes, tsunamis, plagues, typhoons, fires. It was a very difficult time in Japan. After a period of relative stability, this was a time of turbulence. Not unlike our own, except that ours is on a global scale. Right? We know, Dogen didn't know what was going on in Europe or Africa, but we do. Yeah, I find Dogen's approach to practice to be really relevant to our times. Practice that extends beyond the Zendo to every aspect of our life, to our work, or to our relationships, our physical and mental health, and to our creative expression and work. Okay, so with all that review, I'm going to continue with Dogen's introduction to this text. He starts with an introduction, and then he offers stories of many Dharma ancestors whose practice inspired him. So the theme, you know, the title is Continuous Practice. So he tells whose continuous practice inspired him, from the Buddha, the historical Buddha, and two of the Indian ancestors, to Bodhidharma, the Indian monk who brought this tradition from India to China, and then through a number of the Chinese ancestors to Dogen's Chinese teacher, Ruching. We're not going to go through every one of those, but we'll draw on some of those stories as we go, and then we'll go beyond that with some modern day teachers who might inspire us as well. So here is where we pick up from where we left off on Sunday. This is Dogen's words in translation. If you want to go back and read, actually read this text, there's a PDF of it on our website and links under events to this Dogen intensive. So if you can, you can reread this. Don't worry about retaining or understanding. Just kind of take it in as I read, and I'll comment as we go. So here we go. The effect of such sustained practice is sometimes not hidden. Therefore, you aspire to practice. The effect is sometimes not apparent. Therefore, you may not see, hear, or know it. Understand that although it is not revealed, it is not hidden. Okay, there's one of those Dogen paradoxes. But what he's saying is sometimes the effect of our practice is obvious. So we're motivated to continue. We notice that we're a little more focused, a little more patient, less reactive, more willing to see those difficult people in our lives as complex human beings. We open to compassion a little bit. Maybe we have experiences of opening to a sense of spaciousness and interconnection with everything and everyone around us. These are the kinds of effects that people often come to meditation practice because we want those. We wish for those effects. And when they come, we get a sense of encouragement. But then the going gets rough, and we find ourselves suffering from reactivity, frustration, loneliness, depression. We might think, well, what's the good of zazen? Or I guess I'm just not very good at this practice. Or we let our practice slide a little, just when we need it most. But then Dogen says, the effect of our practice is sometimes not apparent. We may not see or hear or know it. And then he makes that paradoxical statement, although it is not revealed, It is not hidden. To me, this implies that we have to trust that there's more going on in our practice than meets the eye, the ear, or the understanding. After years of practice, I've come to believe that there is more going on beneath the surface, at unconscious levels, or in ways we only get glimpses of. Ways that the deep karmic entanglements are working their ways way loose. As we just keep showing up and doing our practice the best we can, even in the midst of turmoil, even in the really difficult times. And those effects might not be apparent to us, but they are nonetheless transforming us within. And the effects will extend out into our lives and beyond in ways that we may never know. This is something about practice that is hard to understand, but I think that we can deeply trust. Okay, next passage is quite convoluted, and even the scholars seem uncertain about it. So we could just skip it, but instead, let's just read it and take it in. Partly because he's using the word it repeatedly, and it's not always referring to the same thing. So, fair warning. As it is not divided, so in that case, it is practice. As practice is not divided by what is hidden, apparent, existent, or non-existent, you may not notice the causal conditions that led you to be engaged in the practice that actualizes you at this very moment of unknowing. The reason you don't see it is that becoming conscious of it is not anything remarkable. Investigate in detail that it is so because the causal condition, the aspiration, is no other than continuous practice, though continuous practice is not limited by the causal condition. So there's another one that kind of spins you around. So even the scholars, there's a very heavily annotated new translation that's just out. Stanford University scholars working with the Japanese Soto Zen organization. And they say this sentence can perhaps be understood. Perhaps be understood as we do not understand what occurs to bring about the sustained practice that manifests the soul, because the practice and our understanding of it are not separate from each other. Well, that's not a whole lot clearer than Dogen himself. But what it seems to be saying to me is that our understanding is not separate from our practice. It's hard to be objective about our own experience. That makes sense to me, that it's hard to make an objective appraisal of our practice. We often try to gauge, oh, how am I doing? You know, am I doing? Am I getting better? You know, am I making progress with this meditation project? But it's sometimes others that can observe or feel the effects better than we can. Or they can feel the effects even if they're not aware of them. I think that's the sort of thing he's saying here. Okay, so the next passage gives us a sense of Dogen's view of time and being. How we actualize our practice in each moment as it's a dynamic process unfolding in this continuously manifesting present moment, which is connected to all other phenomena, both in time and space. Okay, here goes. Continuous practice that actualizes itself is no other than your continuous practice right now. The now of this practice is not originally possessed by the self. The now of this practice does not come and go, enter and depart. The word now does not exist before continuous practice. The moment when it is actualized is called now. This being so, your continuous practice of this day is a seed of all Buddhas and the practice of all Buddhas. All Buddhas are actualized and sustained by your continuous practice. So that sounds really complicated. Sounds a little grandiose. What? How can my imperfect, sloppy practice actualize and sustain all Buddhas? But Dogen is saying that's just the way it is. That's the nature of our being and of our practice, to be connected throughout space and time to ancestors and those who come after. It's only saying things in a very convoluted way. And then he says, by not sustaining your continuous practice, you would be excluding Buddhas, not nurturing Buddhas, excluding continuous practice, not being born and dying simultaneously with all Buddhas, and not studying and practicing with all Buddhas. So he's saying when we cut ourselves off, when we cut ourselves off from ourselves and from others, from life, from practice, we cut ourselves off from the mutual awakening of all Buddha. And we do that in just a moment of cutting yourself off. We do it all frequently, right? But in a one moment, we can let that go and open. And then we're part of that circle of the way again, which we were anyway. And then Dogen says, blossoms opening and leaves falling now are the actualization of continuous practice. Blossoms open and leaves fall. Polishing a mirror or breaking a mirror is no other than this practice. Now, this mirror image is something that you run into a lot in Zen. Polishing a mirror refers to the metaphor of practice wiping the mind free of dust, polishing the clear mirror. And it evokes a whole series of Zen stories about mirror polishing, which Dogen plays with brilliantly in another section that called Old Mirror, which we'll save for another time. But he uses the mirror metaphor to explore that core question. If we are in essence of Buddha nature, of awakening, then why do we have to do all that polishing? Why do we need to practice to wipe away the dust from the clear face of the mirror? If essentially there is no dust and no mirror. So we'll leave that old mirror for another time. But you will see it come up again. That other expression, breaking a mirror, saying polishing a mirror or breaking a mirror is no other than this practice. Breaking the mirror is a Zen expression that means letting go of all self-clinging, all preconceptions, all fixed views, that self-construct that has been put together from even before our birth, started generations before. So I want to share with you a poem called Break the Mirror. It's the title poem of this book, Break the Mirror, by a wonderful Japanese poet, Nanao Sakaki, who is no longer living in this world, but Michael and I were fortunate one time to meet him and take him for a walk around Deep Cove in North Vancouver, where we were living at the time. He was sort of the Japanese Gary Snyder, if anybody's the poet Gary Snyder. Here's the poem, Break the Mirror. In the morning, after taking cold shower, what a mistake, I look at the mirror. There, a funny guy, gray hair, white beard, wrinkled skin. What a pity, poor dirty old man. He is not me, absolutely not. Land and life, fishing in the ocean, sleeping in the desert with stars, building a shelter in mountains, farming the ancient way, singing with coyotes, swinging against nuclear war. I've never been tired of life. Now I'm 17 years old, very charming young man. I sit down quietly in lotus position, meditating, meditating for nothing. Suddenly a voice comes to me. To stay young, to save the world, break the mirror. One more little passage. Maybe one more, maybe two. A little passage from Dogen. He says, even, and this gives us actually, I think, the most radical extension of continuous practice. Even if you might try to ignore it in order to hide a crooked intention or escape from it, this ignoring would also be continuous practice. To go off here and there looking for continuous practice appears similar to the aspiration for it. So what is he saying? Sometimes we strive to practice to escape the painful circumstances of our lives. We end up using practice as a kind of self-soothing drug. Oh, just turn on some Dharma talks, fall asleep. Or it can become an obsession. Or we play out the patterns of attraction and repulsion we have learned in human relationships, where we feel we have to go to some far-flung exotic place to find the real thing. We might even take a detour into some not-so-wholesome addictive behaviors in our seeking. And then Dogen turns around and says, all this is continuous practice. Because at the core is this aspiration to be free from suffering and self-thinking. To fully manifest our being in the world, free from hindrance. And so we go on a detour so that we can see it and turn it around and wake up and realize that was a detour. So the next thing Dogen does is reference a story from the Lotus Sutra of a young man, son of a wealthy man, who leaves his home and roams about living a dissolute life until he's completely reduced to rags and poverty, living on the street. And one day he wanders back to, this is from ancient India, the story goes way back. And one day he wanders back to his father's estate, not realizing where he is, and begs to be put to work, be given some work. His father recognizes him and instructs his manager to put the son to work cleaning the stables. In other words, shoveling shit. The son does that, sets to work, and gradually he gains strength, health, and he's given more responsibility. His confidence grows and he becomes the manager's assistant. And finally, the father calls him into the grand house and reveals his identity and shows the son that he had sewn a precious jewel into the hem of his robe or cloak that had been there with him all along. So if we look a bit beyond the patriarchal aspect of this story, we can see that the jewel of the Dharma, or the capacity, the birthright of awakening, is with us all along. Even the Buddha himself didn't put it there. As one of the great teachers of world wisdom traditions, the Buddha just devised a structure, scaffolding of practice to help us let go of our conditioned illusions that obscure our clear view so that we can see that jewel that was there all along. So Dogen writes, it is like leaving behind the treasure at the home of your true parent and wandering poor in another land. Wandering through wind and water at the risk of your life, you should not discard the treasure of your own parent. While you were searching in this way, the Dharma treasure would be missed. This being so, continuous practice should not slacken even for a moment. We'll come to see as we go along through this month that continuous practice does not mean sitting zazen 24/7, but that we bring this quality of attention and care to every aspect of our life, all the activities of our life, to our relationships, and to the very obstructions that cloud our view, you know, those habit patterns that delude us. As Dogen says, blossoms opening and leaves falling are now their actualization of continuous practice. So I know that's a lot of difficult Dogen language, but if you take even just a phrase or an image home with you and practice with it, that's all we can hope for. Okay, and I have some questions. We're gonna divide up into smaller groups. And what I want, and I know some of you have been practicing for a while, others of you are quite new to practice, but think of, if you can, some effects of practice that are visible, noticeable to you. And then think of some ways that the practice may be working inside you that you can't see at the time, you know, that maybe somebody else may be noticing. Okay. And another way to think about this is to think about a time or a way that it seemed like you were detouring from or avoiding continuous practice, but that was actually part of your path, as it turns out, that awakened you to the nature of suffering and freedom from suffering, that sort of turned you in some way. Okay? So effects of practice that are visible and noticeable to you, or not noticeable to you, that might be actually working inside you anyway, or a way that maybe you detoured or turned away from continuous practice that actually turned out to be part of your continuous practice, or anything else that made an impression on you or brought up a question for you from the top. So don't feel, you know, pressure to answer these questions so much as just share a reflection. Okay, so I'm going to pause here. Oh my goodness, why not turn this on? I'm fussing with my, I forgot to record that. Yeah. Okay, I will re-record it. So I'd like to catch up. Okay, Winnie, if you could divide the Zoom folks, if you need to.